Welcome to Career Tools, our guidance on relationships with suppliers. Here we go. This cast answers the questions, what kind of relationship should I have with suppliers? Is the customer really always right? And what's the best way to get suppliers to deliver to our needs? Wendy, most people think, oh, finally, I'm a customer. I'm not worried about our customers and having to be deferential. And so I'm the customer. This should be easy. Customer's always right. I get what I need when I ask for it because I'm the customer and I outrank the vendor, the supplier. But relationships matter in the business world, in the professional world. How can we help people improve their relationships with suppliers? And it's probably part of the reason we're doing this cast, counterintuitive.
Or at least not what you want to do. So the first point is be respectful. The second is show deference. And the third is, don't feel you have to know.
Wow. Okay. I didn't expect that third one. Makes sense to me, but I didn't expect it. The first two are kind of easy, but I bet a bunch of people, when you say be respectful, are saying, wait a minute, isn't it the other way around?
Yeah. Don't they have to be respectful of me? Don't they want my money? Can't I just indulge my bad temper? And you can, but like your mother says, you catch more flies with honey. And we've been encouraging everyone in the relationships cast to think of relationships and negotiations and relations with people that you work with as long term. And you can indulge your temper like once or twice, but that supplier is not going to bend over backwards to get what you need when you want it at a price you can pay. They're going to start making working with them difficult because they don't actually want to work with you. If you've had a supplier that's doubled their rate for no apparent reason, the reason is they don't want to work with you.
Yes, yeah, so all of the things being equal, if they do that, then they're essentially allowing you to make a decision to go away. Now, I think there's an assumption among a lot of people that, well, you know, every company needs all the revenue it can get, and implied in your statement is that businesses, organizations have choices. One of the choices is, I don't want that money. I can replace part of that money. I can replace 70% of the income I make with customer X. But with that loss of 30% or that replacement of 70%, I lose 99% of the pain. And here's what's interesting to me, guys. Part of the reason you want to be respectful of suppliers is because the best suppliers are going to have multiple places they can sell to. If you don't want to be respectful and you just want to treat everybody as if you're going to have to do what I say, then what happens is those vendors, those suppliers who have multiple choices can say, you know, all things being equal, would we really rather do this for this customer? And the answer would be no. And you end up making it easier for them to go somewhere else, and you end up gradually working your way down the food chain of suppliers. In fact, the people who are most likely to respond well to threats, to bullying, to force, to a lack of respect, since our guidance, this first bit of guidance is be respectful, are the people who use those very techniques, who do that to their vendors as well, who do that maybe to their customers as well. So, if you want the best suppliers, for which you're going to have to pay more, but economics are only part of the equation, then you want to engage in the behaviors that you would expect people to behave in with you. And this is not perfect, but in the long run, if you're going to have a 30 or 40 year career, you're going to probably have a 40 year career or a 40 year professional life, at least, if not 50. Half a century, what do you think you're going to reap out of a lack of respectfulness because you have control and power? And I would also add, if you feel you have control and power over your vendors, perhaps you do in a way. So therefore, you are a bit disrespectful because you have that power and you assert it very often. Don't be surprised when your boss does it to you. Because what you're saying is, when I use power, I use it in a way that benefits me. And therefore, it's really hard. I mean, you know, that's like the pot calling the kettle black. When you don't like it when your boss does it to you, then don't be surprised when your vendors don't do it. And when you say, well, that doesn't matter, then don't be surprised when your boss says, yeah, it doesn't really matter. The fact that you don't like that I have power and I use it. Or you can ask for the world to be asymmetric and for the world to be convenient only for you. Good luck with that.
It's all karma, baby.
Yeah.
So one of the podcasts we already have out, one sets of guidance, is assume good intent. That sounds like a bad sentence.
It's funny you say that, because I was thinking when you said we have guidance that's already out, I thought you were going to talk about the one about communicating with suppliers. We have a podcast, we have guidance about communicating with suppliers from a few years ago. So now I'm interested. So assume positive intent.
It's positive intent. That's the right word.
Assume positive intent. It's one of my favorite manager tools, Cass. And your point is?
If you assume positive intent, then you have to assume that the person who is supplying you is doing their best. Even if you think it's inadequate, that's a different standard than whether or not this person's doing their best.
Yeah, and here's what's funny, guys. Assume positive intent. That's an issue because you assume negative intent when bad things happen. And it goes back to that fundamental truism, the axiomatic truth that we judge ourselves by our intent, we judge others by their behavior. The point of that is that we always have good intent. And so even if our behavior goes bad, we're self-forgiving. But if somebody else's behavior goes bad, we only judge the behavior. And in fact, often we then ascribe to that behavior ill intent. And yet we're suggesting that we're the only good person who always has good intent. No, everybody else has good intent too, and it turns out badly. Now look, if you work with a supplier who repeatedly shows you bad behavior, at some point you can draw the conclusion, you know, when 7 people tell you you have a green tail, you can turn around and look. But you can finally draw a conclusion, but always jumping to the conclusion that it's some sort of ill intent simply doesn't hold water in the long run, unless you want less relationships, which I don't have that many people at the top of anything successful who say, yeah, I've worked to get rid of all my relationships.
Even if that person, their service isn't adequate, being a bully, yelling at them or threatening them or correcting them doesn't change the service you have. It's done. And will it change the future behavior? Probably not, because there's not many of us who really respond to threats and yelling other than to leave.
And I would even say this, if you choose to deliver a message that shows you have power, for instance, we're going to dispute this, or we'd like to talk to you differently, or we want to change the terms of the contract. Because you finally reach the point that Mark and Wendy are wrong, you know, I don't want to be respectful of this particular vendor. What we would suggest is when you use your power, don't use it verbally by bullying or loudness or whatever. Use your power with respect. Meaning, I can say very politely if Wendy's a vendor of mine, Wendy, I've been repeatedly disappointed by your lateness and by terms that we did not agree to in the contract. I'm now taking advantage of clause 21, which puts this contract at risk, which means that the issues of terms, the issues of quality, and the issue of payment are all flexible, and I have greater input in how they're going to get served. Now, I can do that in a very moderate tone of voice. I can deliver a difficult message with respect, without venom, without force, without bullying, without disrespect. It's not disrespectful to say to a vendor, you've failed to do several things that you agreed you would do, or the contract says you would do, or that I've asked you to do. It's not disrespectful if you deliver the message with politeness and candor. You can be candid without being rude. There's no place for rudeness. Didn't you just read something, Wendy, about radical candor?
Yeah. Well, it's in the Wall Street Journal, which is very disappointing. And basically it said that we shouldn't be nice and polite to each other, and we don't need to be kind. What we should do is just give everybody the unvarnished truth.
Yeah, I read it. I had a little different take than you did. I don't think it said we shouldn't be polite or kind. I think what it said was you shouldn't avoid giving a hard message and describe that as politeness or kindness. But the thing that you and I both agree on, radical candor suggests that you can, in fact, tell the truth to someone with actually no gentleness at all, and you should be protected.
Yeah, it's a bit like no offense, which always means you're about to offend someone.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to be radically candid with you. That means you're going to be mean.
And look, I've said this before, I'll say it again. Relationships matter in business, internal, external, and so on. If you would not practice radical candor on your spouse, you should not practice radical candor at work. If it doesn't work in that relationship, because the relationship is so valuable to you, then you need to figure out some other way. Now, that's not to say, and I think the point of that radical candor is, we need to become more candid. And the definition of radical has gotten so watered down that they're probably just suggesting what happens in executive meetings to some degree. But folks, you can be firm and insist while also being nice and polite. In fact, I just read a great article in the journal about Larry Fitzgerald, who's a famous NFL receiver, American football wide receiver, who actually is polite to everyone. Even on the field, he doesn't trash talk. He knows everybody he plays against. He's like, hi, how's your mom? How's it going? How have you been? How's your family? And so on. One person whom he played against was so intent on their approach of trash talking and being disrespectful and calling names and so on, is this person said, oh, he doesn't actually mean that. He's just gaming you. I mean, again, he's willing to question Larry Fitzgerald's motives because he doesn't like his behaviors. And this was from a person who says, I need to yell and be angry. Well, that's not who this person is. And everybody says he's the nicest person in the National Football League. And who would be disappointed if someone said to them, he's just a genuine human being. You can't trash talk that. And this is a guy who's trying to beat you.
Yeah. They're like, you can be nice all the time.
Yep, you can be nice. Okay, our second point was show deference. Now, niceness is about relationships in general. Deference, though, now seems definitely against the power structure of vendors.
You'd think, wouldn't you? So we've talked about deference in other places. We've also talked about professional subordination, which is a kind of deference to your boss. And why would you put yourself in a place that's subordinate when it's a supplier and they should be subordinate to you, right? But first, they have something you want, right? That's why you want them to supply you. Okay, so you've got cash that you think they want, but not necessarily, but they definitely have something that you want. And I hope that everybody has had this experience where you go to a store and you know what product you want and you're willing to give them the money, and some surly cashier is like so grouchy that you think, if I didn't want this right now, I would leave and buy it somewhere else. Okay? And then on the other hand, there's some stores you go into and you get to the end and you're handing over your credit card and you're like, honey, come in here for some cheese. And you've got, you know, a cart full of things. IKEA is famous for that. You go into IKEA, you can't come out without at least one thing. So the supplier may want your money, but they have a product you want, and they can make it pleasant and probably get more of your money, or they can make it unpleasant and you'll probably hand over the money begrudgingly. And that's no fun.
Yeah, I can't imagine that. Well, we've done it ourselves with our clients. Clients who are difficult to work with get less favorable terms. Now, you might say, well, what does that mean? What that means is a client whom we love working with, who asks us for a discount, who wants more lax terms in terms of payment, who wants something special, gets it. Now, you might think that that's not the way things work because you've never worked in a relationship where you had a lot of vendors or you had contracts to do with customers or vendors or what have you, but that's how it works. And it's not, we're not special. I think we're pretty normal. We may be subnormal in that regard. And I find if, in fact, there's a power differential, showing deference is seen as a form of respect, going back to earlier. I used to say this for years when I worked with Mike, when Mike was a client of mine, when he was running a gigantic development organization, God, what was that, 20 plus years ago. In a lot of organizations that produce consumer products, there is marketing, which is generally pretty high in terms of organizational internal power structure. And then there's IT, which tends to be lower. IT has improved in the last 20 years, but it's still generally considered a support organization. When IT says, we want to partner with you, the more powerful organization says, no. Now, IT gets upset when I say that, and so I say, no. The problem is IT is saying we're going to partner with you because IT is not a partner to marketing. Marketing outranks IT in the political world internally. So what we say is, if you're the receiver, if you're the customer internally, in this case marketing, what you say is, I want to partner with you. It's okay for the senior person in a party to partner with the junior person. It's not okay for the junior person to say, I want to partner with you. Because if we're partnering, that means we're in some ways equal. But the junior person can't expect equality. So the reason why we're saying show deference here is because you will get more from a person you have power over in terms of being the customer, because their customers always have more power. You will get more by actually being willing to partner, by deferring, by stepping down, by underplaying your power. And as we've said before, when it comes to power internally in organizations, a manager's power is inversely proportional to how often he or she has to use it. If you have to use it a lot, you don't have that much. If you never have to use it, it's because you're using other forms of influence to get things done, and you're much more likely to rub people the right way. You're much less likely to rub people the wrong way, and you're much more likely to get ahead. As my dad used to say, you can take more than you give, but only for a little while until they run you out of town.
Your dad's cool.
He is. Very nice guy. Everybody likes my dad. He wonders what happened to me. Okay. And then the last point is, don't feel you have to know.
Exactly. And so in that relationship you were just describing between marketing and IT, a lot of the time marketing says, okay, this is what I want. This is how it's going to work. This is the screens that are going to show up. This is what the customer experience I want to be like. And they don't listen to anything that IT says because they're like, okay, this is what I want. Just implement it. But it's possible that IT has some way of speeding it up or some way of making it less complicated or some suggestion about the technology they use, which will make it better for the customer. If you say, I don't know, like, this is what I would like the customer to experience, but I don't know how best to do that, then you get the benefit of the experience of the people that
you're... Of the expertise, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. If you close your mind and say, no, this is what I want, just deliver it, then you get what you want, but it may not be as good as it could have been if you had been willing to say, I don't know how you're going to do that, but I trust you to do it in the best way possible.
This is very similar to our guidance about over-communicating. When you say, I have to have it this way, you're shutting down communications. You're saying, I know better than you do, and you're going to keep them from communicating more openly. The more openly you communicate about what you need and understanding the difference between what you need, what you want, and those things that aren't necessarily black and white, that aren't non-negotiable, the more likely you are to get expertise. And there is no contract where everything is non-negotiable. And if everything is non-negotiable, it's not a relationship. It's not at all.
It's not a contract. It's a jail term.
And don't get me wrong. I did this when I was young, too. When I had suppliers to manage, I would say, well, I have all the power. And I'd say, no, I want this. Well, part of relationships, think about the relationships with your friends and with your spouse and with colleagues and so on. There is some give and take. Nobody's perfect. And you expect some give from other people. And you want to be able to take at certain times. And the same thing's true with suppliers. If you feel you have to know everything and you can define everything and force everything, then there is no give and take. And so therefore, you won't get the best benefit. And oh, by the way, negotiations will be much harder. And if there's no give and take on your side, if there's no flexibility on your side, I suspect there will be no flexibility on their side. And if you do get flexibility from somebody, I demand these 15 things and I will only pay you X, and you feel you can do that because of power, you'll get the company who absolutely has to have the money.
Mm-hmm. They're not good people to be working with.
Yeah, exactly.
And the other thing that is about relationships and experts is that everybody wants to feel like an expert. Everybody loves to be consulted. It's like a boost to your ego. So if you can, even if you know or are fairly sure that you know what the process is or what the product does or whatever, saying, can you explain it to me? Or I'd really like to hear it from you, is a boost to their ego. And that helps relationships too.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that. Thank you for sharing that. And I'll tell you, I make this mistake all the time. I don't necessarily say, yeah, I knew that, because if I didn't, I don't want to mislead. But I don't say as often as I should, ah, I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. And I say it a lot, because there's a lot I don't know, but I don't say it nearly as often. And there are some times that I'm motivated not to say it, because I don't want to admit I didn't know it. And that's much more about me and my insecurities, rather than about me thinking, forget about your own insecurities, Mark. Make this person feel better that they share with you something you didn't know. I love that one. You are basically engaging in relationship investment. You're saying, I'm gonna go past 50% here. I'm going to give you some love. I'm going to give you some joy, rather than making it about me.
It's also very useful when you bend rules, which I used to do a lot. And so somebody would say, hey, next time you have to do this and this. And I go, oh, okay, I didn't know that. I'll do that next time.
Good. God, I love this cast, because we end up talking about behaviors that are respectful. So can you summarize for us?
Yeah, so point one was be respectful. Point two was show deference. And point three was don't feel you have to know.
Good. Thanks, Wendy.
Bye.
Thanks, everybody. That's it. Come back next week. See you then.
Career Tools produces actionable guidance for professionals every week. To receive additional materials via our newsletter and to find products for situations you may face, go to www.managertools.com. Search for Career Tools on Twitter and LinkedIn.